You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Welcome to MLB.com Extras, the NL West. I'm Allison Sutter from MLB.com, and as we discussed last week, the NL West race has become a one-team race, and that is the Los Angeles Dodgers. The Dodgers are just trying to wrap this thing up, number one, and then get the team healthy, which is what Don Mattingly will be trying to do as these last couple of weeks of the season, and then the regular season winding down. So at this point, all the other teams are looking ahead to next year. The Arizona Diamondbacks actually might have a little payroll flexibility, and the Padres might be in a little bit of a situation where they have to fortify their team without as strong a farm system as they did last year. So that is a quick look at the NL West. I don't think there's a question that this team is going to clinch, possibly in San Francisco, but you know, this time of year when teams kind of start losing games, when they're trying to clinch a division, it raises some eyebrows. I know that Don Mattingly has basically said that he doesn't want to talk about any of this until that postseason spot has been actually clinched. But, you know, they're in a little bit of a late season lull, but sometimes it's just a matter of just normal tiredness, isn't it? I mean, it's not as if these guys are playing tight or worrying that they're not going to win this thing. Maybe it's just a little fatigue.
Well, I don't know. I think it usually just comes down to pitching. And, you know, there's a pretty good fall off from Kershaw and Greinke down to whoever's going to follow them. And, you know, they sort of got blown out a little bit last night. And, you know, it wasn't Kershaw or Greinke starting. So I think that's really, on this team, it's pretty much who's on the mound for the first pitch pretty much determines what happens by the last pitch. So they do have some injuries, though. I've said this before, it's probably the most brittle team I've ever covered. I mean, they get hurt almost every inning. Somebody's getting hurt. And Justin Turner is the latest third baseman who's outperformed any expectations. But he's been dealing with a knee problem all year, and it's not going away. And that led to Don Mattingly trying Chase Utley at third base for the first time in his career. And Utley had been working on that since he came over in the trade from the Phillies. And at least for the first opportunity, it went pretty well. And he seemed fairly comfortable. And so that gives him another option. If Turner doesn't bounce back the way they hope he will. And they've also got Corey Seager, who's been playing shortstop, while Jimmy Rollins has been hurt, and they can always, if Rollins comes back healthy, which is still up in the air, Seager could move over to third base and give Turner a breather. So they've got some options there, but they are hurt, and they've got some guys back in Arizona trying to get ready, Kike Hernandez and Yasiel Puig, Jose Peraza. You know, they don't want to talk about their postseason roster, but they've got some options. They've got a lot of players up on the team, active now, and they've got some decisions to make.
Yeah, I want to go back to Justin Turner for just a second. He had an MRI. The team is hopeful, but, I mean, are they just being, like, optimistic and maybe they're a little worried, or is it still, like, kind of remains to be seen if he's going to be able to be strong to finish the season?
Well, this has been sort of a manageable but nagging problem all year. He's got tendonitis. And he's got a bone bruise in there, and it's not going to heal while he's playing. And he needs his bat in the lineup. So he keeps playing, and it doesn't heal. And so they have to give him days off every once in a while that maybe other players don't need at his age. And Mattingly's done a pretty good job managing that, but it's flared up, and it isn't going away now. So they're hopeful that with a few extra days rest, it will go away, but it's the human body, there's no guarantee. And so while they're hopeful that he'll be back in time, they're also realistic enough to know that they need other options in case he isn't. And that's what led to Utley being worked at third base.
So I'm looking at the rotation on the depth chart. And, of course, I mean, and we've talked about this a lot throughout the season and certainly recently. And, of course, you have Kershaw and Greinke at the top. When it comes to playoffs, the fifth starter is not really needed so much. He can be a swing man. He can go to the bullpen. But I mean, just when you've been observing this team, obviously, every day, all year. I mean, and you've covered the playoffs. You've covered them in the playoffs for the last several years. So comparatively speaking, I mean, how much more concerned or more concern is there that there is so little beyond Kershaw and Greinke, considering that they have fallen short of what they have wanted to do every year they've been in the playoffs?
Well, you know, you have to think about how they went into the season. You know, they expected Hyunjin Ryu to be their number three starter, and he was good in the playoffs. And then they expected Brandon McCarthy to be their number four starter. Well, you know, within a few weeks of the beginning of the season, both those guys were out for the year. So they've been scrambling ever since and shuffling a lot of people in and out. Brett Anderson has emerged as a number three starter, but he was signed to be a number five starter. So that's where they are. They really have a rotation of 1, 2, 5, 6, and 7. That's where they are now. And so they weren't able to win in the postseason with Ryu as their number three, and they don't have a three, and they don't have their four. So, sure, it is a concern. And, you know, also a concern is, you know, Kershaw's history. While he's pitched well, he hasn't pitched well enough to get them into the World Series, and that's what they expect from an MVP and three-time Cy Young winner. So, yeah, there are concerns, there's questions. But this is, on the other hand, this is the team they have. They have Alex Wood, and they have Brett Anderson, and those are the guys they have behind Kershaw and Greinke, and that's not going to change.
Chris, I think that we were sort of giving a well-meaning eulogy to this valiant team a week ago, where we were praising them for staying in this race all season with all the issues that they had in the rotation and how banged up their lineup has been. But we were sort of writing them off a little bit. And I have to ask you now, with their six back with 12 left to play, and the Dodgers just they're really struggling. So I guess they're really not out of it, are they?
They really aren't. I mean, it's not hang on the edge of your seat time yet, but it's worth keeping an eye on. Let's put it that way. I mean, I think to be really taken seriously, they have to trim it. Obviously, to be taken really seriously, they have to trim the deficit even more. But these guys believe in themselves. They believe in their pitching the next 2 days. They'll be sending out Jake Peavy and Madison Bumgarner. You know, I think they feel that if they can keep winning, they know they almost have to win every game from here on out. And it's a cliche, but if you take it one at a time, it really is easier to accomplish that sort of thing. And if the Dodgers keep on kind of, you know, leaking, so to speak, maybe the Giants can make a serious move.
Yeah, let's note that there's a kind of an important series coming up. It didn't look so important a week ago. But the Dodgers are playing in San Francisco. The two teams are going to match up for a four-game series. In San Francisco, where it is, you know, as we all know, that the Giants have a nice little thing going there at their home ballpark. So, my goodness, if they were to sweep that series, which is, I mean, it's hard to do, but let's just look at the best-case scenario, then this becomes really, really interesting heading into the last weekend of the season.
Oh, it sure does. We have those four games. After this series here, they play the A's for three games in Oakland. And let me tell you something. The A's love nothing better than to beat the Giants. It's maybe you can call it an inferiority complex, maybe a little bit of a jealousy. You know, the Giants have the nice, shiny ballpark. The A's don't. Giants get all the notoriety in the San Francisco, Oakland, Bay Area. The A's get less. But the A's love being the Giants. So the Giants are going to have to really be ready this weekend. And then after that come the four games against the Dodgers, which may or may not determine the season. I mean, the Giants would, you know, they don't want to see the Dodgers celebrate a division clinching on their field. So it should make for some riveting baseball.
Yeah, that is the worst. It's terrible for player, you know, for whatever team it is. It's terrible when they don't win the division, but when the team that does it on their field, it's like the worst feeling. Okay, so that brings us to the next topic, which is now extremely interesting. And it was supposed to be like a feel-good thing. So Saturday at Oakland, you have the Barry Zito, Tim Hudson pitching matchup. Barry Zito is going to start for the A's, and he's going to face his old A's teammate in Tim Henson, and everyone's talking about this. This is going to be great. It was allegedly a few days ago going to be a game between two non-contenders. So there seems to be a little bit more writing on that. Is it so much, I mean, going on what you just said about how the A's really hate losing to the Giants in any kind of situation, wanting to be spoilers, should Barry Zito even be starting that game?
Oh yeah, well, you know, it has been talked about ever since you know, for a few weeks, maybe even a couple months, since you know, talk grew that Zito might be promoted at the end of the year. Boy, what if Zito could pitch against Hudson, that sort of thing. And now it's come to fruition, as Tim said himself yesterday, and it should be a real interesting matchup. To, you know, a 40-year-old, a 38-year-old. No, it's not going to be power pitching, but it'll be two old warriors, two old teammates, hopefully at their finest.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be it's just going to be a lot of fun for everyone. I think it'll be you know, a nice farewell, even though Zito says he's keeping, you know, his options open and he's not totally shutting the door on maybe closing out his career. But I think we know where this is all going. So it'll be a good time and good for them. And I liked a recent story that you wrote, an article that you wrote, making a case for Madison Bumgarner winning the Cy Young. Of course, we know that he's not going to win the Cy Young because of Zach Greinke mainly. Obviously, Clayton Kershaw's had another wonderful season, and then with the Cubs, Jake Arrieta. So, okay, he's got some competition there. But he made a pretty good case that he's had himself quite a season. What were your main points for thinking that he should be considered for Cy Young?
Well, one that I know holds no water with a lot of voters anymore, and that's wins. You know, wins are viewed as a team-oriented type of thing. And frankly, I tend to agree. But, you know, there's a good chance, there's a fair chance, I should say, that Madison will end up leading the league, leading the majors in victories. So that has to count for something. You know, his durability, innings pitch, strikeout-to-walk ratio, all that's pretty impressive. You know, by himself, Madison Bumgarner is a legitimate Cy Young candidate. The only problem is those other guys are having years that are just as good, if not better, statistically. So I think maybe if you go on the intangibles, I think Bumgarner has it over the others again, because, you know, here's a guy who can come back on 2 days rest, pitch five innings in the World Series. But Bum's not going to get voted in for that or get the award for that, for what he did in the World Series, but it does add a little aura to his persona there.
Corey, of course, we have talked about this many, many times, but this is not what the Padres had in mind when they had the rock star offseason. But they are where they are, which is mathematically eliminated. So let's talk first. I just want to look ahead to next season. I was going through just the payroll situation this year and what they have on the books for next year. I didn't realize that their payroll was $108 million this year, so that was pretty interesting. So they have four guys on the hook for big money: Matt Kemp, Melvin Upton, James Shields, and Craig Kimbrell. And that adds up to about $70 million. Then they've got eight arbitration-eligible players, four first-time arbitration-eligible. So just kind of... You know, obviously, I know that you haven't had long discussions with the front office on this yet, but do they need to get rid of salary? Are they going to be able to have some payroll flexibility? Like, what do you think they're going to do going into next year?
Yeah, and, you know, first thing, you're open there when you mentioned they were not mathematically, they are eliminated from the postseason. I feel like we should insert that the Price is Right sad trumpet, you know, where they... where you go over there, you know, just like, sorry, you've earned this. But we should incorporate that for next year, Allison. I think some sound effects would be, like, it's kind of your next step. What do you think of that?
No, that'd be awesome. So is it that one?
Yeah, it's just kind of sad. I think it's called Sad Trumpet. I think maybe Danny could dig it up somewhere, but it's just kind of fun and just, I think it kind of typifies what this season's been like. But, yeah, you're right. Now, they've been in kind of look-ahead mode here for a little while, and you need not look any further than these big contracts that they have at their sticker prices going up. Now, we have to remember Matt Kemp this year the Dodgers floated quite a bit of that contract as terms of that deal. The Padres is completely now on the hook for that. And Matt Kemp, you know, we'll take a look at his numbers when the season's all said and done, and it'll look like a pretty good year. But the price tag's pretty high on those guys that you mentioned. You know, I don't get the sense from ownership at all that slashing payroll is something they feel like they have to do. In fact, they just went up this past year and continued to add right up until right before opening day. You know, when they made the deal to get Craig Kimbrell and certainly took on Melvin Upton as part of that deal. So I don't get the sense that this is going to be a cost-cutting offseason for the Padres. I don't think that's sort of their mode of how they're going to operate from now on. Now, I don't know how much further north that figure is going to go, Allison, but, you know, this is pretty high. This is the highest, highest total in franchise history here. So, yeah, you're right. They're going to have to be smart about how they cut up the rest of that pie moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, one of the main pickles that they're in, first of all, A.J. Preller, who I'm sure, given everything that he did to put this team together, and of course he had ownership approval on everything, but still, I mean, he's on the line here. I mean, this is his responsibility, and it didn't work out, so I'm sure that he is not looking to, you know, quote-unquote start over again. But a lot of the problem has to be that they sort of, you know, lopped off a lot of their top talent in their farm system to put this team together that didn't work out. And now they don't have as many components to work with trying to put together next year's team.
Yeah, as far as movable chips, you're absolutely right. Now, any kind of anything that looks anything akin to a big deal moving forward would mean moving the last few remaining high commodity prospects you have. And then, again, you know, we could still argue that prospects are prospects, but, you know, yeah, they certainly didn't gut their system, Allison, but they took away some very, very big pieces in order to make this happen. They can't replicate last season's offseason this year just simply because they don't have the pieces to move anymore. So you're going to have to get a little more creative. And spending big in free agency, I don't think it's the way to do it. I think they're going to have to kind of really beat the bushes and look for some bargains and maybe look for some bounce back guys. I think that's where the Padres have sort of always operated, even before A.J. Preller, is maybe taking a chance, on a bounce back candidate, or maybe a guy that might flourish in their ballpark, say a starting pitcher, given the ballpark size and dimensions and all that. But, this is where, the advanced analytics and you really lean on your advanced scouts is looking at these guys and trying to find these sort of hidden gems in these other systems.
Here for one of my last chats of the season, I guess, with Steve Gilbert, Diamondback. And Steve, we are reaching that final resting place. Is that kind of morbid? But there's only a couple weeks left in the season, and of course the Diamondbacks don't seem to be factoring into the playoff picture. So I was scanning through some of the coverage of the Diamondbacks lately, and one of the articles that caught my eye was Paul Goldschmidt going to see a little bit more rest in 2016. In that maybe they're going to be looking for somebody as a reliable backup so that he doesn't have to play like 160. Is that where you're going with that?
Yeah, I think, Allison, they feel like Chip Hale feels like it's possible that Goldschmidt wore down a little bit this year. I pointed out in the piece, I mean, it was he didn't start one game in May. That was his first kind of day off, but he still pinch hit and went in on defense. And then didn't get another off day until August. And that was his first full game off. And, he didn't really get the All-Star break because he was starting first baseman for the National League. So there's a lot of time in there where he was playing. And as good a shape as he's in, as young as he is, that just can take a toll in this day and age. And so I think Chip Hale has got to find a way to get him some more rest. And it's hard because even when he's not necessarily hitting, he still plays great defense or he's still a leader on the field, and they hate to have him out of the lineup, and I can understand why it's tough to take him out of the lineup. But certainly he's dropped off a little bit here these last 6-7 weeks, and it could easily be because he's tired. There could also be some other explanation for it, but I think they feel like he's been a little bit run down and that it's time to maybe find somebody that's a little bit more of a reliable backup, whether that's going out and getting somebody, maybe a left-handed hitter that can, you know, that is willing to play once every couple of weeks or not, or if it's like an Aaron Hill, a veteran that they can get comfortable at first base over the course of spring training.
Yeah, so, I mean, 244 average when I was taking these notes last night, so since August 1st, I mean, that's pretty drastic. That's, I mean, considering what Goldschmidt, how consistent he is, I mean, that would be cause for alarm. That just can't be like, well, that's strange. I mean, that's a seven-week sample size here, and 244, I mean, there really can only be one explanation for that.
It certainly seems that way, and, you know, he's a guy that's so important to that lineup just because of the way he sets everybody else up, whether they're pitching around the guys behind, you know, to get to him. However, he does change that lineup, and they do need him to be a factor. And so, you know, these last 7 weeks have been a little tough because, you know, he hasn't quite been that same factor. Now he still brings it every day and, you know, still plays great defense, et cetera, et cetera. But, yeah, you're right. I mean, it certainly does seem like he's a little tired out there, and that maybe more rest is the only real fair thing for a guy like that.
And really, I mean, it also speaks to just how not only how valuable he is, but I mean, when you know, they don't really have a scary lineup, and so really taking him out for a day has to be painful for Chip Hale, because you're decreasing your chances of winning that game by a lot more than when you have like a stronger lineup and you have a sort of a well-rounded lineup where, you know, one guy isn't just the only guy. You know, the Diamondbacks are sort of in a position where they can't really afford to give him a day off.
It's really hard, you know, because he was hitting .350 too, and you know, so that was hard to take that bat out of the lineup. And you know, now AJ Pollock has started to come into his own, and they actually put him in the three spot yesterday and put Goldschmidt in the fourth spot for the first time. And so, and then David Peralta started to hit a little bit better behind Goldschmidt. So now they're starting to put together with some of these younger guys more of a formidable lineup. And that should also, going forward, be helpful in terms of getting him some more time off.
Let's get into this. As I am doing my weekly research on your team, I saw an article recently that Jeff Breidich was, I think this is a radio interview, which is always where some of the good stuff comes out, and he didn't give a ringing endorsement to Walt Weiss. And this isn't really something that we've talked about yet, because we weren't really sure, you know, what anybody was doing or thinking, but he gave the old non-answer on Weiss's job security. This isn't the time or place to say 100% yes or no. So what still needs to be gleaned from this team this season that he doesn't already know, and do you think that is like kind of a bad sign for Mr. Weiss?
Yeah, that is very difficult to tell, and frankly, with Jeff Breidich, who doesn't give up much at all, I don't even know what to read into that. Do you read into it that he's evaluating them? Do you read into it that he hasn't gotten there yet, and he's just telling everybody, "I'm not going to tell you about it"? That's where it stands, as far as I'm concerned with him. In most normal situations, you're thinking, you know, it's 50-50 or less that the manager will be back, but in this particular case, because he is a new general manager and he's one of the guys who does not like anything at all playing out in the media, I'm not really sure what to make of that. You look at you look at this team, and it's not exactly like Walt Weiss could have managed them out of this situation. So the question is, do they think that Walt Weiss is the leadership that they need? I mean, they instead of bringing in a new general manager, they stayed from within. Is there any thought that they're going to kind of clean house and go from the outside? That I'm not sure, but it's certainly something that bears watching in the coming weeks. I just don't know, to make a long story short here.
Yeah, it's always like that conundrum where you just don't really know. I don't know. When I look at, you know, somebody like Walt Weiss, they've liked him. When you put a bad team on the field, when you have a bad team, you have players that are not of the caliber to be able to win in their division or win at this level. It's not so much, you can't pin this on the manager. You can pin on the manager, like, if a team is, like, you know, supposed to be really good and is underachieving horribly, kind of like the Washington situation with Matt Williams, and guys seem to be, you know, tense, or, you know, they can set a tone for that. But, I mean, really, like, how do you evaluate, you know, not just with Weiss, but how could you possibly evaluate a manager who has an awful team?
Well, I think when I watch this team, and especially on the last road trip when they went 5-5, keep in mind for a road trip of 10 games or more. It was the first time since 2009 that they had finished 500 on that road trip. I saw a team that was still out there playing. I see a team with pretty good offensive players, and from just walking around and talking to the players, they feel like they are the right guys, but almost to a man in various ways, and this is something I'll be writing about as the season ends and into the offseason, they're saying, please give us a frontline pitcher. That's what they need more than anything. And I'll tell you what illustrated it for me. And this had nothing to do with the manager, Walt Weiss. A few nights ago, John Gray goes out, gives up 9 hits and 5 runs in 4 2/3 innings. In his post-game interview, he mentions Coors Field, that he hasn't figured out how to pitch here. Now, that's probably true, but that's a huge red flag for the fans who are thinking, oh, no, another pitcher who's going to drop subtle hints that he doesn't want to be here. More people I talk to say, no, that's not John Gray. It's just that he hasn't been around very long and he doesn't understand how that stuff plays in public. What could help that? If you brought in, say, I'm just going to throw out a name here because I doubt they'd ever sign him, but David Price. Say you had David Price, who's been to the playoffs and been deep, you know, been deep in the very successful seasons. He's the type of guy that could pull a John Gray aside and say, listen, it's more than just pitching. It's how you carry yourself, not just on the field, but off the field. And there are certain things that you may not know, but this doesn't play out well. They lack that. Jorge De La Rosa is a good pitcher. He's succeeded better than anyone else here, but he's not that forceful type personality. He's not the guy that maybe can affect a whole lot of other pitchers. He's left-handed, and other guys are right-handed. I think that you need that veteran pitcher to come in and just make a difference to the young guys. Maybe they can help them with stuff that happens during the game. I'm sure Mark Burley helped a lot in Toronto. That's the type of guy that the Rockies need, and a lot of the position players know that. They know that they can't turn this around by themselves. So whoever the manager is or whatever they do with the coaching staff, they've got to upgrade that pitching, and it's not just the kids that are coming up, because the kids that are coming up, they're all in the John Gray boat. They don't know everything. They may not have the savvy to pitch through a game at Coors Field, or they may not have the savvy not to look like they're defeated by the ballpark.
Thank you for listening to MLB.com Extras, the NL West.